Hey there. Happy Super Bowl weekend to you, Vandalia. Happy Super Bowl weekend to you guys. I don't know your level of interest in the Super Bowl, in the teams playing. For me, honestly, and my name's Ben, by the way, hello. The last couple of years, I haven't had a ton of interest in the game. I haven't had like an emotional investment in the teams that are playing, and I have young kids. So I don't know if you have young kids, you remember having young kids. I feel like my daughters, it's part of their personal mission in life to make sure I cannot enjoy any sporting events on TV. But being from Atlanta, growing up as a Falcons fan, we've tried to channel a little bit of my girls' energy this year. We're trying to get them to rise up. Here's a picture of them. There they are. On the right, my oldest, that's Lila. She's 8 years old. On the left, that's Esme. She's 4. On the right side, that's my good one. The left side, that's my bad one, okay? You have 2 kids, you know how that works. Got a good kid and a bad kid. So we've been able to channel their energy. So for all 4, maybe 5 seconds that they pay attention to the game, we've really got them engaged in what's happening, excited about the Falcons. Now, I'm going to show you another family member of mine. This is our cat, not me, there. That's Muffin. And Muffin is the family cat. My daughters love him more than they love me, you know, my wife. Loves that cat more than she loves our kids. But anyway, he's the family cat. Now, I just feel kind of neutral, emotionally neutral about him. And I'll kind of explain why. You can take that picture down. On one hand, I'm glad that like my kids love him and my wife, you know, cares about him and he's brought some joy to our family. On the other hand, I have kind of this thing. I'm an animal lover, so this is not about whether you like dogs or cats. When I'm paying money to feed a smaller being in my household in exchange for them to mess things up, I want it to be a human being, okay? So with my cat, I'm like, you know, I pay money for you to eat, and in exchange, you scratch my furniture. Like, I don't go scratch any of your things. Like, why are you scratching my furniture? And, you know, just acts like the most loving cat when we're there's a family, and then guests come over, and he just acts weird, you know? And I'm like, why can't you just act normal around people? And so for the most part, I'm just neutral about this cat, or I'm kind of annoyed, but I really just want him to behave. I'm like, just behave yourself and don't embarrass me, okay? That's kind of my stance towards him. Now, a couple of months ago, my wife took my daughters with her parents to a children's play in Atlanta, and so I was home by myself, and got wrapped up in a text conversation. Now, I know most of us at this point are good at multitasking. You can text and do a number of things. You know, you're kind of catching up with people, and then sometimes you get really drawn in to a text conversation where the rest of the world seems to disappear, and that's all you're paying attention to. Some of you, you're doing that right now, so you can't even hear me. But totally wrapped up in this text conversation. So I'm at home, and I'm going to go run a couple errands. So I get in the car, open the garage door. I'm backing up, still texting. It's not, I don't advise that, back up. Then I start to pull out of the driveway, turn my lights on, hit the garage door button, and I leave. A couple of hours later, I come back, pull into the driveway, my lights are on. I look to the bottom of the garage door, and there was half of Muffin. So what had happened was, you know, when I hit the garage door, we have these sensors, and he kind of made a last-minute decision that he was going to try to go out underneath the garage door, slid under our sensors, was pinned by the garage door. So I obviously immediately got out of the car, hit the garage door button to lift it up, and I walked over, and it was Muffin's head and then a very flat body. I'm talking like a head and a placemat, okay? Now, for those of you who have dogs, people who have dogs talk to dogs like they're babies, okay? Oh, Boo-Boo's hungry, right? You know, that's how people talk to dogs. You gotta talk to a cat like an adult. So I walked up to Muffin, and I'm like, bro, my bad, okay? That one's on me. Are you okay? Is there, like, a way that you can, like, reinflate yourself? Like, how does this work? So I'm freaking out, and, you know, I'm in one of these situations where I literally do not know what to do, and I know it's late on a Saturday evening. All the vet offices are closed. And so I don't know what to do in a situation. So what do we do when we don't know what to do in a situation? We Google it, right? So I'm like, well, I'm gonna Google it and find out what I'm supposed to do right now. And so I open up Google and I'm like, what do I type in? Like, what do I search? Flat cat, you know? Like, cat flattened by my garage door. So I'm like, I literally don't know what to do. It wasn't long after that, and I call my wife, and she's like, well, we're almost home. If you can put the kids to bed, you know, I'll address Muffin and figure out what we need to do. So they get home. At this point, Muffin had worked his way into the house, and we kind of have this little pantry, kind of mud room off to the side of our kitchen, and he went in there and was laying down sleeping, and I would go back in there and check on him, like, are you still breathing, you know? Everything cool? Like, I'll be back in a minute, okay? Don't go anywhere. So they get home, and my kids are, you know, going crazy, and so I start putting them to bed. And Holly, my wife, says, where's Muffin? I explain where he is. So she went over there, and he wasn't there. So she goes all around the house looking for our cat, and he had worked his way upstairs into this canopy tent in my daughter Lila's room. And my wife had read at some point that when a cat is going to die, he or she goes someplace that they don't ever go. So my wife assumed Muffin went to the canopy tent because he was going to die, and at which point she got in the canopy tent with him, laid down beside him, and started weeping. Now, keep in mind, it's in my daughter's bedroom. I'm trying to put my 8-year-old to bed. And Lila's like, Daddy, why is Mommy in my canopy tent crying? I'm like, taxes, you know? Busy tax season, it's hard, you know? And I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do. So go back to Google, right? I searched to see if there are any 24-hour animal hospitals. Found one that was like 20 minutes away, wrapped Muffin up in this blanket, and so I drive him over there. And at this point, it's very late on a Saturday night, and there are no other animals at this hospital. There's like a couple of cars. I walk in, and there's three veterinary professionals in front of me. One lady takes the cat from me and says, well, what happened? And I said, Muffin was trapped underneath our garage door. And she said, well, did you open the garage back up immediately as soon as it happened? And I said, I opened the garage door immediately when I saw that it happened. And she said, well, did you bring him up immediately when you lifted up the garage door? And I said, I brought him up here immediately when I knew where this place was. So she kind of looks at me like, you know, and I'm like, is she gonna call like kitty defects on me or something? Like, what's gonna happen? So they take Muffin back, do like two x-rays. So now I'm in the lobby. I'm the only person in the lobby of this 24-hour animal hospital, and I'm pacing, I'm praying. I am so emotionally invested in this cat right now. I got people texting. I'm texting my mom, who speaks directly to the Lord when she prays, and I'm asking her to pray. You know, all these people, you know, just begging God to, you know, show mercy on my family for this cat and all of this stuff. My wife's asking what's going on. So finally, the vet comes out and she says, good news, Muffin is going to be okay. Where the garage door came down, it just was a lucky place for, you know, for it to land. He's going to be okay. And I was like, oh, praise Jesus, you know, and I'm having like a worship service there. This lady already thinks I'm weird, right? And she said, well, what you need to do is you need to put him in a confined spot and you give him drugs twice a day. I'll teach you how to administer these drugs. She said, they're going to make his eyes very big and he's going to be very sleepy. And I said, oh, those kind of drugs, you know? She didn't think that was funny at all. But so sure enough, that's what I did. Put Muffin up in the guest bathroom two times a day. I would go in there for a week and administer these drugs. And he's looking at me all bug-eyed, like, it's cool in here, you know? And then he was okay. He's fine now. And it's like the miracle cat. That was one clap there, yes. I wasn't expecting you to clap, but you clapped once, and so I was excited about that. But the reason I tell you that very silly story is, one, just because I felt like you needed to know it, and two, because when I think about this, when I think about my view of that cat, is that for the most part, I'm emotionally neutral. I just want him to behave himself. Do what he's supposed to do. Don't mess up anything. Don't embarrass me. Now, when there was a crisis, and we've had one, I'm very emotionally invested, very much in it and interested in, you know, making sure things work out well. And then I'm back to feeling neutral and somewhat annoyed by this cat. And I thought about this one day, and I was like, you know what? I grew up feeling like God looked at me that way. Like the way I feel about my cat, I know that's silly, but it's true. The way I feel about my cat is the way I grew up thinking that God felt about me. That God was kind of neutral towards me, but really just wanted me to behave myself. Ben, just stop messing things up. Like, stop embarrassing me. You're embarrassing me again, okay? Can't you just get it together for just a little while? You know, I've done all these things for you in your life, and you can't seem to keep it together. Now, then there'd be a crisis in my life, whether it was a legitimate crisis or just a crisis that, you know, I felt emotional about, so therefore it was just a crisis to me, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I felt like God was there. God, you know, those are the times when God was really going to help me. But for the most part, it was just this view of God being annoyed, frustrated, angry at me. God got a hold of my life when I was 18 years old. But even then, even like really walking with God, I still had this approach that like, man, I had to really build up my resume for God for him to be okay with me. That I had to do all these things. I had to, you know, compile all this list of good behavior, good actions, good deeds, this ministry that I would do for people. And that way, like, God would be okay with me. We'd get the thumbs up. He'd be glad that I was his pet and everything would be okay. And then I remember there was a period of time, 19 years old, where I'm making bad decision after bad decision, a series of bad decisions in the church world that I grew up, they called it backsliding, you know, so I had backslidden. And I just remember sitting there one day asking myself this question right here that we'll put up on the screen, or thinking that God is always mad at me or disappointed in me. And the question was, why is God always mad at me or disappointed in me? The question was, is this really the way that this is supposed to work? Is this the way this is supposed to be? That man, you know, we celebrate this good news at Christmas, Jesus is born. This good news at Easter, Jesus is alive. And then it felt like the rest of the time, it was just like God is mad at you and God's disappointed in you. Why? Because you don't behave well enough. Because you're embarrassing him. Because he does all this stuff for you and you can't seem to keep it together. And I just remember thinking like, is this the way that this is all supposed to happen? Because if this is, I don't know how interested I am in following somebody who's always mad and always disappointed in me. Now, at that point in my life, I knew about three scripture passages. I knew John 3:16. I knew the Lord's Prayer, but I didn't know where to find it in the Bible. And then I knew a passage that we're going to look at today. And this passage was the beginning of me really discovering the heart of God as I believe it truly is, not as I saw it growing up. And really for me, this passage was the beginning of me viewing God and viewing the way God views me in a different way. And the passage starts by saying this, "The Lord is my shepherd." And this is a passage that some of you may have heard of. Some of you may have memorized it growing up like I did. Some of you may know. It's the famous 23rd Psalm. And it starts by saying, "The Lord is my shepherd." So I remember reading that and saying, okay, hold on a second. Let's just pause right here at the beginning with these first five words. The Lord is my shepherd, which means I'm a what? Sheep. Yeah, there. See, a few of you are paying attention. I'm a sheep. And I thought, well, this makes perfect sense. Why? Because sheep are kind of stupid. And that's how I am. So I feel like, all right, that already makes sense. A few things that you may or may not know about sheep, depending on how much free time you spend reading up on sheep, you know, and what it means to take care of them. Sheep do not instinctively travel in herds or in packs. You know, a lot of animals, they just instinctively stay together. Sheep aren't like that. Sheep are prone to wander off. And I was like, okay, again, that's me. You know, I'm a dumb sheep who's prone to wander off. Sheep have no natural defense mechanism for themselves. So they have no way to defend themselves against predators. They don't have venom, poison. They don't have fangs, claws. That's why you never hear a story of like everybody freaking out because there's a wild sheep loose in town. You know, here comes the sheep. You know, or you hear about somebody, some innocent person being wooled to death or something. It's like sheep cannot really defend themselves. Sheep have no natural instinct towards food. So if they're in a climate that doesn't have good soil, they won't naturally move towards vegetation. Essentially, they'll starve. Sheep are prone to turn upside down. I have a picture that I'll show you. It's called a cast sheep. And they can turn over. They're incapable of turning themselves right side up. So they'll lay there until someone picks them up and flips them right side up, or they'll die in that position. So I was like, yeah, now that really, really makes sense now to me to understand what sheep are like. But the interesting thing about this passage is that it was written by King David. And King David wrote this later in his life. And the reason why he, understood this is because early in his life he had been a shepherd. So he knew all about that profession. But King David was not dumb. King David was a brilliant, brilliant human being. Just a brilliant military strategist. He was a poet. He was a musician. Very articulate. The guy was brilliant. And probably knew it. He certainly knew that he wasn't weak. Some of his military feats in his life, also his personal, battling and fighting, not just with human beings, but with animals that he had killed with his own hands or with some sort of weapon, was unmatched. Just this incredible warrior. And David had seen in his life, get turned upside down and had sometimes in his own power turned himself right side up. In some ways he couldn't, but certainly had the wherewithal and the skills and the understanding to be able to keep himself together and be strong and smart and brilliant. And he was an incredible leader, and the people loved him and admired him. But I think when David looked all the way back to earlier in his life when he was a shepherd, I think the reason why he said this had nothing to do with the sheep. David knew that the shepherd-sheep relationship was all about the shepherd. It was all about the shepherd. For him to say, okay, this means you're the sheep, that doesn't matter. He's just saying, man, this is what shepherds do. It's an incredible job, because here's what they do. They stay in that culture. They didn't have these fancy fences. They stayed with the sheep all the time. So they're literally sleeping out in the fields, surrounded by sheep. They were there to protect them from predators. They were there to provide for them, to defend them, to comfort them if they were sick or hurt, to move them towards vegetation if they were in an area where they couldn't get any food. Literally, the shepherd took care of everything. So David knew that this wasn't about the sheep. This was about the shepherd. The shepherd, what the shepherd did was take incredible care of his sheep. And what the sheep did is, well, that's what we'll look at in the rest of this passage. So I read that the Lord is my shepherd at 19 years old. And so here's what I assume, and again, I knew the passage, so I knew it didn't say this, but here's what I would have assumed based on my view of God at that point in my life, is that the 23rd Psalm says, the Lord is my shepherd, so I shall be a good, consistent Christian sheep. Because God is so good, I'm going to make sure that I make him proud. I'm going to make sure I repay him for his goodness with my Christian consistency. I'm going to make sure that I behave and I don't embarrass him and I don't mess anything up. I'm going to do it right. So the shepherd is happy with me. But the chapter doesn't go like that. Here's how it really goes. It says this: the Lord is my shepherd. You can put the rest of that chapter up there. There you go. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. I lack nothing. Why? He takes care of me. He takes care of me. If I don't have what I need here, he moves me to a place where I have what I need. If I'm in danger here, he moves me to a place where I'm not in danger. He makes me lie down in green pastures. In other words, he brings rest to my life. He's not here to bring a way more burden and way more pressure and way more guilt and way more condemnation to me. No, he brings rest to me. He leads me beside quiet waters. Some of you feel like, man, I wish someone would lead me beside some quiet waters in life right now. He refreshes my soul. That's all about him. That's all about what he does. That's not about what I do. I don't lead myself. I don't make myself lay down. I don't refresh my own soul. That's all about the shepherd, not the sheep. He continues from there. You go to the next part of the passage. He guides me along the right path for his name's sake. We wonder in life, what am I supposed to do? What's the right thing to do? Where should I go from here? Should I take that job, make that move? How do I handle my kids in this difficult time we're navigating right now? It's like, no, that's about the shepherd. The shepherd will guide you. The shepherd will help you. The passage continues from here. After he's talking about leading you in the path of righteousness, even though you walk through the darkest valley, and this is David saying, or I walk, you walk, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Even though I go through some storms in life, doesn't mean this. There's a guarantee of everything going the way we want, being happy, and us, you know, nothing ever going wrong. It's like, even when you walk through those things, you're with me. The shepherd is with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's what we need when we're going through these storms in life, these dark places in life. We need comfort. And we try to fix it ourselves. We try to make it better. We try to cover it, mask it. We try to run to all these things to make us feel better. And the shepherd wants to comfort us. Continues. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Even in the conflict and drama, and for some of you, maybe like people you would legitimately consider your enemies right now. Hey, the shepherd has something to say about that. The shepherd can help you in those situations. You anoint my head with oil. In that culture, it was the custom. If you had a visitor, you would anoint their head with oil. That would be super weird in our culture, but in that culture, it was a sign of respect. I never, ever would have grown up viewing God as someone who would show me a sign of respect. And I knew I was supposed to respect God, and that's healthy, but never like that God was like, hey, yeah, you come to my house, I'm gonna show honor and respect to you because I love you that much. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And I said, you know what? That's different. That's a different view of God. And through this passage and what this chapter began to do in my life and mean in my life, in books that I read about this chapter and conversations I had with people who really seemed like they walked with God and enjoyed it, this really led me somewhere in life. It led me somewhere to where I said, you know what? I feel like I had the wrong approach. And now I have a different one, and it's simply this. Is that walking with God is greater than working for God. That my whole life, I had taken this approach that I have to work for God. I have to do, perform, be good, be consistent, make him proud, that's the basis of what this was all about. And what I realized is that walking with God is better. Walking with God is about a relationship. Working for God, that's religion. That's a religious system. A relationship is different from a system. That working for God, I was always exhausted. I was always exhausted by myself and my inability to kind of measure up to these standards that I had for myself and that I thought that he had for me. Walking with God is about rest. It is about the joy of the Lord being my strength. And working for God, it was about me, the sheep, and what I did. It was about my Christian, God, church, Jesus, Bible resume. And walking with God was all about him. And in this process, you know what I learned is that when I walked with God, I worked better. When I walked with God, that some of the changes that I wanted to make became more achievable. The changes I wanted in my heart, in my life. That I wanted to pray. When before I was like, oh man, I got to check this off the list. I got to add this prayer. I prayed again today. I can add that to the resume. Walking with God, I was like, man, why would I not want to pray? Why would I not want to pray to the Good Shepherd? You know, and the changes, again, that I wanted to be different and better, it was like, man, I don't even have the power to change those things anyway. I need God working in me and through me. The impact I wanted to make on people around me, I couldn't even do that anyway. I wanted it needed to be God working in me and through me, and everything began to change at that moment. And so for you here today, I just want to say, man, maybe for some of you, you walked in and you got a lot of pressure and stress in your life out there, outside of these doors. You're aware of a lot of places where you're coming up short as a parent, as a spouse, as a worker, as a manager of money, as a a manager of your own house. The list goes on. And then you walk in here and you feel a lot of the same pressure and a lot of the same reminders about how you're just not measuring up. You're just not doing enough and you're just not doing it good enough. And so for some of you today, maybe a good reminder for you is to put it more on the shepherd and less on you, the sheep. To stop straining and striving and trying to make God yet another person that you impress, like the teachers at your kid's school and the people in your neighborhood, and just allow the shepherd to guide your life. Jesus made this statement that I kind of want to leave with you today. He said this, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me." Sheep really have one job, and that's to stay with the shepherd, to benefit from his love and to stay with him. And for some of you, what that means is just, hey, letting God guide your life. The things that have to do with your relationship with him, the things that have to do with your kids, with your money, with your finances, with your future, and inviting God in. Asking God to guide you and lead you and show you where to go. You know, it was a couple of months ago, I don't know, maybe almost a year ago, I was at my parents' church. My dad's been a pastor of the same church for over 35 years, and I grew up there. So when I go back there, I know, you know, people, they've known me since I was born. And I was talking to an older lady after church, and she asked me a question. She just said, you know, Ben, how you doing, right? That's the question we all ask each other at church, right? Hold that thought. And usually I say, I'm great. I'm doing good. How you doing? Oh, yeah, good. Hey, good to see you, you know? And I did, this is very rare for me, but I just started answering her. I just started talking. And I just started telling her about things that were happening in my life. And I don't know if you've ever done this before, where as you're talking, you're like, why am I giving away this much information right now? Like, words, come back, you know? Like, why am I sharing this with her? Like, and just kind of kept talking and talking and talking. And a lot of what I was trying to really, you know, was talking about some things that were kind of difficult in my life at that point. But I really had a big decision I needed to make. And that was kind of the core of, you know, what was making me freak out in all these other areas of my life. And I was just like, I just don't feel like I'm hearing from God. And I'm not audibly. I don't want to hear from God audibly, but just don't really feel like I have this direction from God. And I don't feel like I can hear from God on what he wants me to do. She's just listening the whole time. And I get to that point where I'm saying, you know, I just don't feel like I can hear from God. And she simply said this, you know what, Ben? Yes, you can. And that was it. And she walked out of that conversation, and I was like, well, that's a three-word mic drop right there. Wow. And I thought, you know what? I have a relationship with God. I have the Spirit of God in me. I have the wisdom of God available to me. I'm surrounded by people who are wiser than me. I have heard God nudging me and leading me at other points in my life? Yeah. He can. And I'm over here striving and straining, working, trying to make everything work in my life instead of walking with God. It's like, you know what? Walking with God, it's better than working for Him. And for some of you, you can hear. You can hear the shepherd's voice. Day in and day out, big stuff, little stuff, you can talk to Him about anything, and He'll guide you. You know, Jesus said, a good shepherd will lay down his life for his sheep. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. And I wonder, why would Jesus say that? Well, it's because of this, kind of our bottom line for today, is because of walking with God is better than working for God. And for some of you, you'd say, I've never walked with God. I've never really tried to work for God either. Like, I've never really had a relationship with Him. I've never heard His voice. I'm not in church today because I heard His voice. I'm in church today because I'm trying to make up for some wrongs, or because someone tricked me or drugged me in here. But the reason why Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, is because it's all about Jesus. Walking with God is all about Jesus. Because otherwise, it would be about us having to work for Him. God expects perfection because God is perfect. So we would have to, okay, I'm going to get it all right. And then I'll go to God, and then maybe I can have a relationship with Him. God said, no, you're never going to be able to perform. You're never going to be able to do enough to have a relationship with me. And that's why He sent Jesus, to be a sacrifice for our sin. Jesus was lifted up on a cross to carry the sin of you and I, so that we can have a relationship with Him. So even entering into a relationship with God isn't about us. It's about the shepherd. So why do we think, for those of you who've been walking with God for a long time, to think it would be about us and not about the great shepherd? But for those of you who say, you know what, I've never walked with God. For me, it was realizing that it was about Jesus. Ben, you know, do the church thing, and what's that all about? Jesus. In the Bible, Ben, that's just kind of confusing, and there's a lot of stuff I don't understand. There's some really weird stuff in there. What's the point? The point is Jesus. Ben, are you a Christian? I'm a Christian. Everybody from the South is a Christian, right? I say, you know what? What is Christianity all about? It's all about Jesus. That the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. God loves you. He sent Jesus. That whosoever believes in Him will have life, which means a relationship with God, which means you'll walk with God. With God, you're in. And for me at 19, I just said, excuse me, at 18, I just said, I'm putting my trust, the belief of my heart, the trust of my life in the person of Jesus Christ. Because I can't fix it. I tried. I cannot make it all better. It's Him. And I want to give you an opportunity to do that tonight for the first time, today for the first time, if you've never done that before. And for those of you who have at some point in your life, I want to just bring you back to that moment where you realize I couldn't save myself. I couldn't enter into a relationship with God myself. It was Jesus. It's all about the shepherd. That's what it means to live day in and day out as well. Look back to the beginning to remind us how to walk day in and day out, not about us, but about Him, relying on Him and what He's done for us and Him working through us. Let's pray together. And I want you to know, if you're here and you've never put the belief of your heart and the trust of your life in Jesus, you can do that. You can do that today, tonight, tomorrow. There's no special place that you have to be. There's no secret words that you have to say. It is a matter of trust. It's a matter of you relying on that as the way to cross over from not having a relationship with God to having a relationship with God is Jesus. I'm saying, Jesus, I trust that you are the way. What you did for me, your death, your burial, your resurrection, what you did for me, I trust that as enough, as the way for me to walk with God. God, I pray that you will, your spirit will move in hearts, move people to take that courageous step. And I pray for the rest of the people in here who have made that step, have put the trust of their heart, the belief of their life in you, that they will look back to that time and moment in their life when they realized they couldn't do it, it was you. And they'll know the same is true day in and day out, moment in, moment out. It is about the shepherd. It's not about us. Help us to walk with you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.